This is Mark Silvestri, and you are about to experience the Top Cow Chronology Project. Yeah.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Top Cow Chronology Project. I'm Jace.
And I'm Jaden.
And in this episode, we're going to be continuing our coverage of the Tomb Raider Journeys series from Top Cow, and we'll be talking about the number 5 issue from August 2002. Now, for those of you not familiar with the Top Cow Chronology Project, we are a podcast discussing all the comics in the Top Cow universe in chronological order. So that's a reading order. That's not a publication order. So thanks to a user named Condor on the Comic Vine boards, he put together this chronology, this reading order of all the books in the Top Cow universe. So we started at the beginning of his chronology way back in ancient Egypt, and we're reading them through and then discussing them. Now, none of us on the Top Cow chronology have read any of these books before, so we read the book and you're getting our initial impressions, our thoughts on it as we, you know, just finished reading it. So if you want to follow along or take a look at the chronology, you can go to our website, thecomicsourceblog.com. If you go to the podcast page, off to the right, you'll see a Comic Vine logo. Just click on that logo and that will take you directly to the chronology on the Comic Vine website. Also, we like to tell everyone where they can find the books, so you can follow along with us. If you look ahead at the books we're going to cover in the future on that chronology, it'll give you a great idea of what books you need to have before we cover them. Now, this Tomb Raider Journey series is a little bit unique in that it's a licensed property, whereas the vast majority of the books we're going to cover are not. So, as I mentioned in the last episode, Top Cow last week had a huge Humble Bundle from HumbleBundle.com, and they had well over $700 worth of comics that you basically could name your price, you know, $15-$20, and you'd get it all. Just a huge amount of comics. Really no other way to get these books any cheaper. So I hope that you were able to take advantage of that, because we're going to be covering a lot of those books. But in this book, for this book in particular, as I said, a licensed property, and Top Cow no longer has the license for the Tomb Raider property. It's over at Dark Horse now, so for that reason, they're not allowed to sell any collected editions of this or digital versions of this. And I'm pretty sure that this 12 issue Tomb Raider Journeys series was never collected, at least not in English. So you basically have to find the physical issues. So you can check out your local comic shop, or if you go to a convention, you can keep your eyes out for them there. Of course, there are several copies available on eBay. They're relatively cheap, a dollar or two, you know, but then you're going to have to pay for shipping. There are complete runs available also. If you don't have the books, and you're not a big Tomb Raider fan, and you're just thinking about picking them up as far as following along with us, this is not a series I feel that's a must-buy. I can't in all conscience tell you to go out and spend money on it. It's quite a bit a product of its time, of the late 90s, early 2000s, where comics were kind of at a low ebb, both creatively and commercially. So it's probably enough just to follow along with us here. And the other thing is, they don't tie in immensely to the greater Top Cow universe. So I don't, as I said, I don't know that I could tell you to go out and invest time and money in searching them out. It's probably enough just to hear us talk about them. And anxious to get past this this series and get back into the Top Cow universe proper. Would you agree with that, Jaden?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so let me give the creative lineup for this. Well, before I do that, let me once again say, if you do want to get your hands on the books, the best way is eBay, definitely. Okay, so the creative lineup for Tomb Raider Journeys. This book was published August 2002 is the cover date. The writer continues to be Fiona Kai Avery. Pencils, once again, by Drew Edward Johnson, who drew the first three issues. Then we had a guest penciler for issue four, and now Drew Edward's back. Inks by Marlo Alqueza. Colors by Chad Fidler and Jonathan D. Smith. And the cover for this one, this is the first one we've had that's not an Adam Hughes cover. It's Kay Shaw, who, if you're a fan of Top Cow, you'll know that name from Witchblade. He did a lot of Witchblade issues back in the day. Really a great artist. So let's get into the book itself. Starting right from the front cover. Really cool cover. We see Laura. She's wielding her dual pistols. She's kind of squatting on her haunches. And behind her is kind of a medieval knight, the bust of a medieval knight with some glowing eyes. Look like maybe they're on fire, kind of burning. And Laura appears to be wearing a schoolgirl uniform. So for those of you that are fans of the Catholic schoolgirl uniform kind of look, you may find this a little provocative, let's say. And then across the top it says, Journey with Laura back to high school? So I was very curious what that was going to be all about. So we turn into the front cover. We have the creative lineup and a little blurb on the bottom last issue. Laura Croft has once again outwitted and outmaneuvered Kagan, her mysterious new adversary. But will destiny keep throwing the unlikely pair together? And more importantly, why is this new man now a constant in her life? So interesting that they bring up Kagan, because he for the first time, as I talked about in the last episode of the Top Cow Chronology Project, we had a recurring character. We had some themes and some plot threads start to connect. Last issue felt like for the first time in the series, it wasn't just a one and done issue. And so that is definitely referenced in this little blurb, but Kagan doesn't appear in this issue and is not even mentioned. So it's interesting that they put that in the blurb. So we turn to the first page of the book, and the setting is Chesterfield Private Academy. We see in the background, welcome class of 1992. So there's a class reunion going on, and a man named Tony Adler appears. Apparently he's the current prime minister of the UK. And he meets with some other friends, and they're all reminiscing and saying hello. And of course, Laura drives up in a big giant off-road vehicle, kind of interrupts them all, and they're wondering what kind of person would, you know, show up in this big off-road vehicle. And of course, it's Laura. And once again, we see the dichotomy that's inherent in the Laura Croft character. Dirty Jeep, mud on the tires, mud on the Jeep itself. And then, of course, she gets out looking like a million bucks in a dress, you know, low cut, showing off her body. So apparently her and the prime minister were friends back in high school. We see some flashbacks to what each of them looked like back then. The whole cliche of Laura being younger, of course, with the pigtails and the skirt and striped tie, blazer, what have you. Whereas the prime minister is sporting a mohawk and a tattoo and saying down with the government. So I guess sort of ironic that he ends up as the prime minister. So the prime minister, Tony Adler, offers to escort her into the building. They're reminiscing about old times. And Laura mentions one of her old teachers, Mr. Bohannon, and she wonders aloud if he's coming, and Tony informs her that he passed away last month. And Laura's very sad to hear that. Apparently, she had sent him a gift a few months ago, and along with a letter, and the gift was actually the crown of King Arthur that she had found. And the letter reads, Dear Mr. Bohannon, years ago I wrote a paper regarding King Arthur's legend that you described as inadequate. You were correct. Please know that since then I have seen my mistake for what it was, that my own life experiences has inspired me not only to learn from history but to embrace it. My attitude toward you then was sadly lacking in respect. I hope this crown, a magnificent piece of history, which actually belonged to the great King Arthur himself, will make up for my actions. LC. So we switches back to present day on the next page, and Laura says how sad his passing, and as they're approaching the main hall where the reunion's being held, there's a big flash of light. Laura, of course, being the action hero that she is, immediately runs forward to see what's wrong. And we see there's a medieval knight holding a sword in one hand and the crown in the other, fully armored. And he states, "The one who claims my treasure has come. Stand forth, show yourself, and what ye seek." So as Laura and Tony enter the auditorium, they're both transformed into versions of their younger selves that we saw in the flashback on the previous pages. Tony has the mohawk, Laura has the pigtails, and they actually appear to have de-aged a bit. So Laura takes it upon herself to fight the knight. That's clearly what he's there for, and make sure she protects all those others who are there who also appear to be versions of their younger self. So for the next few pages, there's quite a battle. Typical Tomb Raider, Lara Croft action. She manages to, even though she's fighting with a table leg, she doesn't defeat the knight, but she manages to take the crown from his hand through some gymnastic maneuvering. And once she has it in her hand, she says, "I accept this crown on behalf of its owner." And the knight replies, "May it protect thee until the end of days," and kneels before her. As she implores him, "Answer my question, why are you here now?" And he says, "I was made to eternally protect the crown of King Arthur. Whenever it is bequeathed to someone new by its current owner, I manifest according to that dying owner's final wish." And he disappears in a puff of smoke. So Laura says, "Final wish, And as the knight disappears, they all revert to their adult selves. And Laura says, "That was certainly an adventure." And she doesn't recall it being part of the reunion program. And Tony's perplexed on what happened to him and everyone else. They all became young, just like they were in high school. And Laura says that she believes that by sending the crown with a letter to Mr. Bohannon, she made him the rightful owner of it. And when he died, he had a wish, and not only was the knight holding the crown, but there was a letter inside, and the letter reads, "I recall that paper on the myth of King Arthur that you wrote for my class, in which I described your work as inadequate. But I encourage you to remember that I also wrote you had great potential if you only applied yourself. I am dying. It happens to all of us sooner or later, and nothing would please me more than to see you once again in place of this. I can only give back the precious crown. My final wish is that you've remained the cheerful, sweet girl I knew in class, even with all your adventures." So, being that the knight said he granted the owner's final wish, or he... What were the words he used exactly? Eternally protect. I manifest according to the dying owner's final wish. So he showed up there in order to give the crown back to Laura, or have her prove that she was worthy of having the crown according to the dying owner's final wish. So when Mr. Bohannon had said that he wished that they were all still young and cheerful and sweet, Laura believes that's why they were all versions of their younger self. So not a lot to the story. On the last page, we see that Laura leaves the reunion, and as she leaves, Tony Adler approaches her and says he has an assignment for her. And she says, "Oh, government assignment, huh?" And it says to be continued. So not a lot to the story. Didn't take a lot of time to read. And as I said, interesting about that blurb about Mr. Kagan inside the cover being that he didn't really appear at all. If there's any common thread with this, it's that once again we see, as we have in several issues so far, a supernatural aspect to it, with people being transformed, sometimes just in appearance, as we saw some people appear as pirates last issue. And in this issue, you know, they're actually de-aged. They actually appear to be younger. So that's the only thing it really has in common. There seems to be an explanation for it here, but we don't know that we've necessarily had an explanation for why Laura keeps getting glimpses of the past in this series. Started with the first issue with the pirate ship, and then we've seen that kind of theme throughout the series so far in the first 5 issues. Other than that, this just appears to be another one and done, albeit a short one. You know, Jaden commented on it when we first started talking about the issue, about how there really wasn't much to it. It didn't take long to read.
Yeah, definitely a very simple story. There's not much. It seems like one of the books that's in between two big story arcs to me.
Yeah. Not really sure how it advances the plot. I was, you know, kind of excited after the last issue that it started pulling some threads together. And now it seems that we've taken a step back. So, not really much more I can say about the story itself. One thing I did notice for the first time in this series, the dialogue seemed a bit corny to me.
Yeah, it was kind of.
I mean, this is the first time it stood out to me. You know, it may be that the dialogue has been not great. You know, the scripting has been not exceptional up to this point, but this is the first time that it actually kind of pulled me out of the story. So, Fiona Kai Avery doesn't seem to try to go overboard with giving them English accents or anything, but just the dialogue just felt a little stilted here. So, how do you feel about
it? I was thinking maybe it's just because it's them, her with like her high school friends or something. It's just a different setting. So just maybe the author's just not as good at writing dialogue in a more traditional, like this type of setting.
Right. Rather than just action and yeah. Exposition and moving the story along. Yeah, that could be true. Didn't think about that. How do you feel about the art?
It's very 90s art. It reminds me a lot of if you see this type of art, it just reminds me a lot of the 90s. It's not bad. There's things I like about it, but there's certain things that I don't. There's kind of a lot of shading. It makes it hard to see some of the characters sometimes. Let me look on like page 8. Yeah, there's a lot of like shade on their face where it just kind of looks weird to me. Looks like it's a little bit too dark, but it's not the worst art I've ever seen, but page nothing eight. Special.
Page 8, where they're just talking?
Yeah, it's just like under his chin and stuff, just like how dark, it's like straight black.
Yeah. What's interesting to me, again, you know, I've said this throughout the series whenever we've had a Drew Edward Johnson issue, his art now is so polished and so clean and so absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
That this, to me, you know, it stands out. I maybe am a little harsher on his art here than I should be, because I know how good he can be. And, you know, this is when he was first starting out again, you know, and he's grown leaps and bounds since this. So yeah, for me, it's just a problem of, rendering. As you said, sometimes the panels are just, gorgeous, even when he's doing something as simple as drawing a facial expression.
Yeah.
I think, the upper right panel on page 10 is a perfect example. Great proportions in the face. The surprise on their faces, very self-evident. Just, you know, gorgeous. But if you, you know, go back just a few pages before that on page 6, Laura's head there, the proportions don't look quite right. The background on that page is great, with the tower and the shade, the birds, the moon, the trees, the jeep, and her, you know, body proportion, it looks great as well. But the way her hair and her facial expression look, it just kind of, there's something off for me there. So, but yeah, just a little bit of inconsistency. in the rendering. But, you know, I've said this before, I'm going to say it again. The storytelling from panel to panel is great, but really the strength of this art for Drew Edward at this point in his career are the layouts. The layouts are awesome. You know, he uses different size panels, different pages, superimposing action scenes over panels in the background. Sometimes he'll use the entire, you know, a narrow panel horizontally that covers the whole page. Other times it's insets. Page 14 in particular is a great example of good layout, kind of using different size panels, different shape panels to keep you interested as you're going through reading it. Page 15 also, again, having the knight and Laura as they're fighting, kind of in the forefront with other panels showing other action in the background and the onlookers' reactions as well. So certainly cannot fault Drew Edwards' layouts. But yeah, just a little bit of inconsistency here and there.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. The layouts are really well done in this book. I don't think there's a single page that's has the same layout as another page, except for maybe the full splash pages.
Yeah, and once again, 18, just the facial expression and how, even though it's supposed to be an action scene, how static Laura looks in that, and she looks so stiff.
Yeah, you know? Her face looks a little bit weird, too.
Yeah, so... yeah, just a little inconsistent. That's pretty much all we can say. So, the colors I feel work well. You know, the whole story takes place at night, and the colors are a little muted and a little dark, to kind of reflect that. So that's done well. But there's still plenty of, bright spots in the story, that kind of help to give, that high adventure feel that you would expect in a Tomb Raider book.
Yeah.
Also, the coloring of the knight himself and the light that comes off him is portrayed well through the use of color.
Yeah.
I really like that panel where he disappears in a puff of smoke too. That's also well done. Good use of lighting effect and shadow and color, and one of the better drawn panels by Drew Edward.
Yeah, I think that's the smoke looks really, really good.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. Anything else you want to say about the issue, Jaden?
Not really. There's not too much to say about this issue. Like you said, there's not much to it.
Yeah, I think the fact that we've managed to talk about it for 20 minutes is pretty good.
Yeah.
Considering this is by far has to be the shortest synopsis that we've done. So here's hoping the next issue starts pulling in some more threads. You know, one more thing I'll mention, perhaps the purpose behind this issue was to bring in the character of Tony Adler and kind of explain a little bit about that character's history with Laura, and perhaps the assignment that he's about to give her will tie into what's been going on in the book so far. And once again, I will mention, and I don't know that I've said this to you, but I feel like maybe the strength of this series might be that it's more than the sum of its parts. So it may be that we don't realize we're not giving it enough credit. That it actually is entertaining and better than we think on a per-issue basis. So basically what I'm saying is once we've read all 12 issues and we can take it together as a whole, that it'll be better than taking each individual issue in and of itself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
All right. Well, if you want to follow along with us on the Top Cow Chronology Project, as I said, just go to check out our website, the Top Cow Chronology. I'm sorry, the comicsourceblog.com. And you can go to our podcast page where you can find previous episodes of the Top Cow Chronology Project and also our Comic Source podcast. There's also a sketch gallery on our page. Manny's got his blog there. You can watch episodes of our YouTube channel. If you want to contact us, there's a contact us link there where you can get in touch with us. You can comment on the individual episodes. If you want to email us directly, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. You can also reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter. On Facebook, just do a search for The Comic Source. That's us. Twitter.com/TheComicSource if you'd like to follow along with us on Twitter. That's really probably my go-to way of spreading news about what's coming up and exciting things going on in the world of comics. You can eavesdrop on my conversation with other creators. You can hear what shows we're going to be at and all kinds of good stuff like that. So once again, we want to thank everyone for joining us.
Later.